Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. It's episode 163. We're back. Lots to talk about this week. It feels like soccer in BC certainly is lots happening, lots going on. We got some Vancouver Whitecaps, of course, as they continue MLS play, road match versus Austin. But then, certainly at least the fun stuff, at least for us, I was on the ground for it, so I'm excited to talk about it. Pacific, Vancouver FC, first ever CPL BC Derby. Lots to take in as the CPL in general opens its season, but of course that was certainly the grandstand match amongst a fun opening weekend, and then more favorite competition, if I can even have a favorite competition, but I don't know, something about the Canadian Championship just gets me, and it was back this week, and it showed why I love, you know, cup competition so much. So we're gonna obviously dive into the stories there, but before we get into all of those great stuff, I'm your co-host Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined as always by Sam Yaron. I mean, Sam, how's it going this week? Busy weekend, but we made it through.
Absolutely, I'm doing fantastic. What a feast of Canadian soccer content it's been. I love, actually, I know it's maybe a tough start to the season for those CPL teams, but getting CPL opening weekend and then Canadian Championship right back to back, I think just, you know, hurdling the season off to a great start in terms of fan interest, engagement, good storylines. So that was fantastic. And yeah, we're going to dive into a little bit of all of it on the show, a little less Whitecap centric because there's some other stuff to talk about. I mean, obviously for me, the headline, we experienced it last night. Obviously depends on when you're listening to the podcast, but TSS Rovers with a night to remember, something that will forever be marked in the history of the Canadian Championship, right? This is uncharted territory. And now TSS Rovers holds that spot as the first team from a third division to win their round, right? Because I believe that, was it Vaughan that won a leg? This was in 2015 or something like that. So
2019.
Oh, it's not that long ago. I felt like
Alistair Johnston and Ryan Raposo were on that Vaughan team, I'll throw in, which is fun.
That's right. Absolutely stacked. But nonetheless, you know, hopefully we see something similar with TSS where there's guys who move on to a greater stage. Anyways, we'll dive into that match a little bit, the nuts and bolts. We're going to talk a bit about CPL opening weekend in general, as well as Vancouver FC's first ever match and their tie with Pacific, which was great to watch. And then, we're going to talk some Vancouver Whitecaps as well. A 0-0 draw, a classic 0-0 draw on the road at Austin. It's a point gained at the end of the day. And I think, you know, we'll talk a couple little points about the match, but then also maybe just take stock of where the Whitecaps are headed into the bye week, how their season has gone so far. So very much looking forward to getting into it. I think you can, if you're listening, you could probably tell how excited we are about the way soccer is trending on the West Coast right now. It's been really, really fun.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, let's just dive into it so we don't waste any time and can get to the buffet. So to speak, if we have a buffet right now, I guess here we're at the appetizer, then we got the main course, then we got the dessert. We'll let you pick what is what, but certainly to start, the Vancouver Whitecaps, they headed down to Austin in MLS play. It was something, I mean, we previewed the game a bit. It was, you know, interesting matchup chance for them to head out, try and get, you know, some points on the board against a struggling Austin team, certainly an Austin team that had some holes. And in the end, you know, the Whitecaps did relatively well for themselves in the sense that they go out and get a road point again. You can never scoff at a road point. That hunt for an elusive road win continues, you know, the wait since June of last year and, you know, just a chance to rack up some more wins on the road. But hey, one step at a time. I think the big storyline for me is a clean sheet on the road. Those certainly haven't been easy to come by. And I think that was a good bounce back for Yohei Takaoka, gets named to MLS's team of the week. You know, I think it was just something where he needed that. At 1.39 was the XG for Austin. Vancouver 1.16. So it showed it was, relatively even game in terms of chances created. Austin had the slight edge as the home team. Takaoka, that's where the benefit of a, good goalkeeper helps you end up making, maybe taking a point where Austin will look back at some of their chances and feel they could have maybe gotten a win out of it. So, I mean, overall, Sam, just reflecting back, how do you feel about this Whitecaps draw? And, how do you feel it pushes them into the, this bye week?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was tweeting the match on the 86 Forever Twitter account. And I think what I said after the match is, hey, you look at where the Whitecaps are in the standings now, eighth in the West, at least before this upcoming weekend. They've been off to a scruffy start and they had to play in the Champions League and they're eighth. They're still in a decent spot. I think that's a victory of senses. Obviously, you'd love it if the team was lighting the world on fire. They were top of the West. But given the struggles, given the untapped potential, given the issues this team has faced, some of those 100% of their own making. I'm not saying that they're blameless in all of this, but nonetheless, given that they've struggled, I think they're sitting in a good spot. So that's a positive takeaway. In terms of the match specifically, I think like you, the first thing that stood out was a nice bounce back from Yohei Takaoka. I do think, ultimately it's LAFC. They're the best team in the continent. You have to kind of toss out those struggles in the Champions League and just focus on their MLS defensive record, which has been really, really good. Quietly, Tristan Blackman, Ranko Veselinovic, they're not suffering the same set piece issues, and their defensive work from open play has remained really, really good. So that was a highlight as well. Maybe I'm back on Team Ranko again. I think he's been putting in really solid performances. At least, when he's been called upon. Great to see Kubas back from a shoulder injury so soon, which when he did go down, looked a little bit scary. Nice to see him get a match in before the break. I'm just kind of running through the lineup here, essentially. But Ali Ahmed, I thought another really solid performance in the midfield. No one probably thought that he was going to be an eight at the start of this season, but it's working out really, really well. We could talk about whether he should go play at left back and Luis Martin should get onto the bench. I think that's certainly a discussion you could have. Julian Gressel's continued solid play. I'm going to continue to, lightly pat myself on the back. He's been the Whitecaps MVP so far. Then moving up, Ryan Goldman. I think this is maybe one of the slightly less positive stories is that he got off to a great start first 2-3 matches in the season. Since then, though, it's been a bit quiet. And I think for a guy you're expecting to really stir the drink for this team and be that match breaker at times, maybe get you that elusive road victory with a moment of brilliance, it's just not happening right now. And that's got to be a little bit frustrating for him and I think for the team as well. And then finally, Simon Becher and Brian White up front, we talked about which one of them would start because we had Pedro Vite penciled in up front. It turns out they started together and the chemistry just didn't quite look there. I had liked what I saw from the two of them together, but it just maybe didn't feel like they quite had that dynamic character to stretch the field. I mean, I think almost what you would have wanted in this Austin match is like a prime Christian Dahomey, who could really break things open. The problem is Daho is just not firing on all cylinders right now. So it's going to be really interesting. I just saw today, some social media content from training, Sergio Cordova. I don't know if he's back to full team training, but he's certainly back on the pitch, back active again. So if all three of those strikers are available, where do they go, right? Do you only play one of them? Are you going to continue using Brian White in a pseudo number 10? How much playing time does Simon Becher get? I think it's a Pedro Vite needs to play more. This is
should play more.
An ongoing theme on the show. So, I think, I guess, big picture from Austin, a lot of the same themes. Pretty solid defensively, good midfield play, a little bit left to be desired in the front three, just in terms of finding the right chemistry, finding the right combinations. And then ultimately in a road match where you probably just need those one or two moments of real clinical finishing, they just didn't find that.
Yeah, I mean, it sums it up, you know, pretty well overall. I mean, a lot of the key themes as well. It's going to be interesting, really, to see what happens up front, because, dare I say it, it seems like the Whitecaps have settled down at the back. It feels like, you know, I think little things like you mentioned, Rankos really stepped it up, which is good to see. I mean, Blackman as well, he's kind of been the leading guy there, and he's just continued to do his thing. I think that's obviously something where they've seemed to find a balance in terms of what works for them in terms of marking, what works in terms of just the setup. They seem to be comfortable in front of Takaoka, which is key. I think, you know, we also could consider maybe some of their early defensive struggles was just little things like communication barriers, not language barriers, but more communication barriers, just understanding how each other works. And, you know, the fact that Takaoka has settled in, and you look at the last few Whitecaps results, right? It's a 1-1 draw on the road, a 0-0 draw on the road where you get a clean sheet, a 1-0 at home, you get a clean sheet, a 5-0 at home, you get a clean sheet. So three clean sheets in a row in MLS play. And then even before that, a 1-1 on the road versus Minnesota. That's, you know, just one goal, you take that. 1-1 in the road against Galaxy, just one goal, you take that. 1-1 at home against Dallas. Like, it's really, other than that, you know, those two goal games at the start of the year, like, the Whitecaps quietly just 7 goals against in 8 games, which you look amongst the West is pretty much one of the best. It's this tied for second best in the West, actually, in terms of goals against. And if you look across the league, I think it's like borderline top 8 or something like that, which, considering how bad it looked at the beginning of the year, you take that, you know, stability. And I think that's just an overall theme for the Whitecaps. Like, quietly, they're undefeated in 6. Like, does it feel like that? No, but this is MLS play, of course. Again, you removed the LAFC Champions League tie, but look, you're undefeated in 6. You're getting points on the board. I mean, as we said, in terms of where the team should be at bare minimum, it's always win your home games, or get points on the road. Currently, their bare minimum they should have been at, using that metric, is 12. They're at 10. So they're a bit off the pace, but I think really those two games at the start really is what hurt them. And specifically that loss to RSL. Had they drawn that, they'd be 1 point off the where they could be. If they win that, they're ahead of it. I think it really sums up where we think they should be in this next stretch, which is go win some darn road games and keep being good at home. But overall, I think there's a lot of good signs. And again, the underlying numbers continue to be relatively solid. And now it's just, okay, you've sorted out the defense a bit. I think you know what your midfield looks like. It's just the same questions remain. Who are your fullbacks? And the forward one's the fascinating one, because certainly you want to see more from Sergio Cordova. He's your DP. You paid money for him. I don't think you can bench Brian White. I think it's something where I've remained, if he's continuing to get his chances, he's continuing to make things happen. Something where White should be staying in my opinion. So do you pair Cordova with him? Do you think that's a partnership that can work? Do you bring Cordova off the bench? It is something to think about, especially when you look at this Austin game. It feels like, you know, in this Austin game, when you want a guy like Betcher and White together, you want them like they were in the Montreal game. Why did that work? Because Montreal was pinned back, so they were down a man, and it kind of allowed you to get a lot of box touches for Betcher and White, whereas White can kind of play that transition game. But I think one thing we've seen over the last few games is that Betcher maybe isn't as comfortable playing that sort of transition, direct sort of game. He prefers just getting that chance to run in the box, and get those opportunities. So that's something where Cordova could come in, because he likes those stretch games. We see how he likes to run with when he was at RSL. So maybe that is also something to consider, where Cordova could slot in for Betcher in some of those scenarios. But also fits in where, I agree, Vite needs to be playing. So all of a sudden, again, same questions. Who do you sit out? It looks like for now, Gald, Vite, White should be your front three, but lots of questions.
Yeah, I think I agree with most of that there. Ultimately, I think, you know, you're going to have to probably spoon feed Cordova some starts and some minutes just to try to create some momentum, right? Like, I know that that's maybe not what everyone wants to hear. I think there's a decent section of the Whitecaps community that's sort of writing off Sergio Cordova because what we've seen so far was not good. But, you know, I think there's still a very competent MLS goal scorer there that was on pretty good pace at the end of last season. So they need to do what they can to get him going. Just, I think, underlining a little bit, you know, I talked about how the front three struggled with that final touch against Austin. Something that's worth noting too, and we highlighted this in the preview, they don't have good natural center backs at Austin FC. I mean, that's Alex Ring playing at the back. It's Vasanen, a young Swedish guy who's new to the league. I wasn't very impressed with their defensive work, even in the match against the Whitecaps. And so, again, it's just one of those ones where you would have liked to see Ryan Gauld have a field day and really terrorize those center backs. And I think you made a great point about, and I think that was what I was trying to illustrate, at least with the whole prime Christian Dahomey thing, is Simon Becher out in the run in transition. And it's just not quite what you're looking for, right? And we know that Brian White's not exactly pacey either. So I agree with you that I think for the most part, right now in Vancouver's best 11, Brian White at striker is really, really, really nice. Or even if you want to drop him back and experiment, you know, Brian White in that hold up role, and then he can be the poacher in and around the box. He makes your best 11 the way he's creating opportunities. It's that question of who plays with Ryan Gauld and how that third forward spot is filled. We've been relatively consistent. It should be Pedro Vite, but if for whatever reason Vanni Sartini does not want to do that, he has to find a permanent solution that works for him, is the way I would put it, right? Because we've seen Dahomey there, it hasn't worked. We've seen Cordova with Brian White, it didn't really work. We've seen Becher and White, I think it works when one of them comes off the bench. I don't think it works as two starters. So Vanny's, they're back at training today and they've got plenty of time to work on this before their next match in MLS play. I think they need to find a little new ingredient up front, because Julian Gressel, whoever's playing in the midfield, going to provide some good transition play, some good service. They're creating chances. The XG numbers for once are actually decently flattering. It's just, starting to really cash in on those chances and, you know, perform at their possible expected levels.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it feels like for me the big solution to all this, at the very least, is Ryan Gauld. And I think this is why this buy is so crucial.
Good players can just solve and paste over a lot of deficiencies when they're on their game.
Because I think to that opener versus RSL, Pedro Vite didn't start that game. Again, something we didn't necessarily agree with, but he didn't start that game. Ryan Gauld had a phenomenal game. The Whitecaps should have won it. Where it's something like, I think he picked up the knock, and really since he's had that knock, it seems to have hampered him. And I think that's something where it's also why Pedro Vite's absent or lack of starts is felt so like off. It's because Gauld's struggling, and it feels like when Vite's with Gauld, we've seen the best version of Gauld post knock, if that makes sense. Like, I think right now with what Gauld was at, which felt like 60-80%, unless Vite was beside him, that 60-80% was just too much to handle when he was the lone creator and teams were on him. So I think this break is going to be huge, because the fact they get this bye week, he gets that chance to maybe reset, take a few days off. I think that could hopefully do him world of wonders. I think it's something where, look, I think, again, I'm not going to shy away from it. Gauld and Vite should be on the field together. But say you're trying to get more strikers on the field, it is a little easier when Gauld's in carry everything on my back like he was against RSL, or when he's at his best mode, than what he's been at lately. And that's something where it does open up a little more possibilities for Vanni Sartini. I think, of course, it's something where, again, you need to find a way to get Vite involved. And that's where the tough questions come in, because, again, it's either you move a striker, either it's you put Gauld as an eight, you move Ahmed out the lineup or to fullback, or Schopf out of the lineup if he's healthy. And those are not easy answers to do, but I think it's something where it's a sacrifice you have to make just because they've continued to look better in the attack when Vite gets his looks. And, you know, unfortunately, those looks just haven't been, coming from him, which is, so unfortunate given how good he is. So I think the Gold question's a big one to watch out for over the bye week. And the Cordova point, I just found it interesting because you mentioned the idea of spoon feeding him. Hopefully he's back this weekend, because I look at that schedule. There's three games that I'm looking at in the next few weeks, and then things get interesting. You get Colorado at home. I mean, Colorado's always a decent outfit, but they've been struggling a bit to start the year. One win, four draws, three losses. You'd fancy yourself in that game. It's a winnable game. You typically do well against Colorado at home. Get Minnesota at home, another game where Minnesota looks really good. But still, I mean, you're at home. You want to do that. Then you got York away in the Canadian Championship. We have to remember, like, certainly one of those three games, if not the York game, could be a great game for Cordova to just run around and maybe get his, his touch, his fitness, get a run in. So I'm specifically looking at York game, and if he's available earlier, certainly those games, because I think, yeah, just having him in some sort of form would help just the striker option. Because at the very least, if you're looking at Betcher, White, and Cordova, you're not going to play all three at once. So if you're bringing one or two of those guys in form, hopefully off the bench, you're probably doing well for yourself.
Yeah, in terms of those guys on the mend, last when I spoke with Vanni Sartini, it seemed like at least he was positive that Alessandro Schopf and Sergio Cordova would be close to, if not available for selection post the bye week. So yeah, I think that's maybe slightly more realistic on Schopf's end than it is on Cordova's, but we will see. And yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they handle York. York has not looked good so far in their couple Canadian Championship / CPL matches they've played. But obviously, the Whitecaps have a checkered history in terms of, underrated CPL teams. So they're going to have to watch out for that one and take it seriously. So yeah, that's certainly something we're going to watch. Okay. Without belaboring this too much, because we will move on to the real main course of this podcast. But one last Whitecaps point, Alex, I just want to ask you a question going forward. Where does now Ali Ahmed might not be a starter for the rest of the season, but is this something where Ali Ahmed keeps an Alessandro Schopf out of the starting 11 and he stays in the midfield? Or is it just natural, given that that left back spot is the one position they really haven't been able to nail down on this team? Does it make more sense to kick him back? Because I think for better or worse, it does seem like Javane Brown is penciled in at right back, and I feel like that's their first choice going forward. But I just wonder about that third midfield spot, the left back position, where Ahmed fits in that, especially when everyone's fit. It's been an easy decision with Schopf out, but I think it maybe gets a little more complicated when he's available for selection.
Good question. I mean, I'd also like to see more Ryan Raposo there. I mean, I'm not going to stray away from that. I think the LAFC, the fact that he kind of got benched after that felt like a bit harsh in a sense. Just
not exactly his fault, was it?
Here, Ryan, go play right back when you've been playing left back all year. Oh, yeah. By the way, you're marking this guy, Dennis. You might have heard of him. He has like 13 goals in 8 games. So have fun, kid. Right. Something along those vibes. So, of course, I'd love to see more Raposo on the left for now while Schopf's out. And, certainly could create a bit of competition there. And from there, I mean, in terms of the Ahmed thing, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Schopf comes back. I think the nice thing is having Ahmed there buys you time with Schopf. If you're the Whitecaps, ease Schopf back in. Like, the fact that he looks so great to start the year, and then now he's just been an injury, purgatory for the last month. All of a sudden, what felt like was supposed to be a knock has quickly become, this and that. Ease him in at as slow as you need to. Let Ahmed continue to grow, continue to shine. And then, yeah, from there, like, that just it really allows you. Like, if it's 20 minutes is all Schopf's got, let him do those 20 minutes. Don't push him. If it's 45, and go from there. And the nice thing is about Ahmed is he can continue to develop at the midfield position, which I think personally is always going to be good for a player long-term, just because playing in midfield's the hardest position. And then if you're going to be developing there, it's going to only help you if you shift back to fullback, if you shift out on the wing or wherever he ends up. But I think it's something where the Ahmed, I think ideally, because, you know, if Ahmed keeps developing the way he is, he's probably going to stay in. But it's something where you think the Whitecaps are probably going to go shop Gretzel Kubas when everyone's healthy. But the nice thing is they can ease back towards that. And look, if Ahmed's playing out of his skin and, you know, when that happens, the nice thing is you can just keep him in. And having Shop come off your bench is never a bad way to push a guy like, you know, Ahmed and continue just and give you a bit more depth. And look, a lot of competitions are coming up, but you're going to assume or you're going to hope they make a good CanChamp run. The schedule gets busy because of that whole League's Cup stuff. Like it's something where, you know, having that sort of depth does not hurt.
I think that's wonderfully put and laid out. I just, one thing that I'm still struggling with is I understand that there is theoretically this thing called League's Cup that exists, but I've yet to really materialize in my head the fact that these are actually matches the Whitecaps are going to be playing in this season.
They kind of matter too, which isn't like, there's especially like, of course, Canadian Championship, the Whitecaps have a great avenue to the Champions League spot that's there. You know, only CPL sides on your bracket. Montreal or Toronto is going to get eliminated the next round. And, you know, there's a lot of going for you there. But say, you know, something slips up, maybe you slip up against York because the Whitecaps never won away to a CPL team, I don't think. They drew Cavalry away twice and that they lost to Pacific away. So I'm pretty sure they've never beaten a CPL team away by my calculations. So something where, say, you slip up against York, all of a sudden League's Cup or doing well in MLS because they finally got a brain together and were like, oh, maybe we should let Canadian teams actually qualify through their league play. But that would require them somehow going and winning the Shield, which already feels unlikely based on the start, and or, you know, win MLS Cup, which, hey, if they win MLS Cup, that's, you know, a lot, there's going to be a lot different conversations. So League's Cup also means a lot for Champions League because you can win or you can get a Champions League spot there. And yeah, it's not easy with Liga MX teams and top MLS teams, but it feels like with a one-game knockout setting in the summer where some teams might not take it seriously, the Whitecaps have a depth to do well. And for whatever reason, Vanny has been kind of the master of one-game knockout since he's been at the Whitecaps. So that's why I'm just saying the League's Cup could end up being important, as wild as it sounds, and it's such a weird concept as it is.
Well, it's just so tough when you have... For me, it's always just challenging when I have no points of reference, right? Like, I've never seen this competition before, so I don't know how to feel, what to expect. I may end up loving it. It's just, it's weird that we've mentioned it a bunch on the show, and I won't actually believe it's real until I actually see them play the matches. Okay, I don't know, Alex, do we have any final thoughts from Austin? I think we actually juiced a good bit out of a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, I think we juiced a good bit, but I'd say let's move on and not to League's Cup, because to be honest, if you were to ask me straight up, who's in their group again?
So we'll take that offline and we'll get back to you.
Well, we'll get back to that. Certainly don't have to worry about it for a while now. But CPL was back this weekend. Lots to be excited about. I mean, we opened with fun little Wanderers Ottawa match that was just fun tactically. I mean, Patrice Geiser and the Wanderers, they might be vulnerable defensively as they showed in the CanChamp and at times that in the first game, but man, they are fun to watch on the ball with all this movement and right backs turning into left CMs and, you know, strikers playing at wing back in possession and all this fun stuff. So that was a good game. 1-1, of course, for Halifax and Ottawa. Second game saw Forge and Cavalry. Those games never disappoint. That was just a high level tactical matchup, high pace of play, just great adjust. It was just an overall great game, finishes 2-2. And then of course the game week, it certainly kept a closer eye on. I was at, pleasure to be at, sold out Pacific crowd at Starlight. First ever Pacific versus Vancouver FC, BC Derby, Salish Sea Derby, Lang Lang Derby, whatever the heck you wanna, what name is gonna end up sticking, we'll see over time. But 1-0 for Pacific, fantastic crowd. Shout out to the Fraser Valley Fanatics. They brought the noise on the away crowd, like they were very loud. And then of course Pacific brought the sold out crowd. When Manny Aparicio scored it, it felt like it blew up in there. And then the last game, of course, Valor, just, you know, thoroughly outplayed York and won 2-0 and, you know, set the table for Can champion style, but maybe didn't end up going the way they wanted. But I mean, Sam, we can go maybe a bit quickly about the other game. Just want to throw out the scores if we want to. But to start, I mean, Pacific VFC, just because that was the game. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to catch it, but certainly, you know, a great occasion for soccer in BC, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I watched a good bit, if not all, of all these CPL matches this past weekend, and absolutely fantastic. I mean, yeah, just kind of running down the leaderboard, so to speak. I echo your thoughts about Wanderers. Like, that's just going to be wild all season. And they're probably going to concede a ton of goals, but it's going to be very entertaining. And to me, just shout out to Aiden Daniels, Can U23 team alum. Looks like he's off to a good start. And I don't know, I've been a closet Wanderers supporter. My parents now here on the East Coast, so it's the most accessible team when I'm out here. I hope that they can get things together, because I feel like the CPL is a better league when there's a prominent team on the Eastern Seaboard, right? Like, that kind of rounds out. You get some Pacific had a run, Forge has been good, Cavalry has been good. It's nice to have an East Coast team in the mix. So hopefully, I think this is a project where they can tweak it and figure things out as the season goes on. They always start in the road, right, with a bunch of road matches. Once they get back to the Wanderers grounds, I feel like they kind of pick up some momentum. So they might get off to a slow start. And then Atletico looking really good still. I didn't watch a ton of them last season. Obviously, they had a lot of success and seems like they're going to build on that. And Ollie Bassett looking sharp as per usual. Forge and Cavalry, I mean, those are just two rock solid teams. I think kind of the best of what the CPL has to offer. Valor against York United, I think we maybe saw midweek that maybe you shouldn't take too much away from that 2-0 Valor victory, because both teams in the Canadian Championship looked quite poor midweek. So I'm almost going to kind of throw that one out a little bit. I think we need to see more from those teams before we make a true assessment. Although Alex, as you pointed out in preseason coverage and stuff, York and Valor are probably two teams that are going to struggle this season in the CPL. Or certainly they have there's a lot being asked of them to get up the table. And then, I mean, speaking of asking a lot, Vancouver FC, brand new franchise, has to go to what is already their natural rival on the road in Langford at Starlight Stadium. What an amazing environment. And what a great match, really. Like, it was, yes, Vancouver FC did not create a lot of chances, but it felt tight the entire way. Like, there was a real tension and just an intensity to that match that I wasn't there in person like you, but I could feel it through the TV. Like, I was locked in the entire time. And I have to say, I was really impressed with Vancouver FC's structure in terms of that can sound very a very like base level comment that doesn't really have a lot to substantiate it. Lots of teams try to play in structure, but for their first, you know, non-exhibition match, the commitment, the understanding that the whole squad seemed to have was really, really good. And I think obviously it seems clear that they're well coached, right? Now, the question is, do you have all the right ingredients player-wise? Do you want, are you going to be able to create goals? I think we've seen through two matches now, including their Canadian Championship, that might be a bit of a problem going forward. And, it would have been great, obviously, for your inaugural match in the CPL. You maybe get a bit lucky, you get a good bounce, and you find a way to pick up a win on the road. Ultimately, even though it was a half volley from outside the box from Manny Aparicio, I think that is a thoroughly deserved victory for Pacific, who were the better team on the night. I guess that kind of rounds out the weekend affair in the CPL. But I will say, despite the fact that they crashed out midweek in the Canadian Championship, I think Vancouver FC is going to be a tough out for teams in the CPL this season. Because if that's their baseline, if that's where they're starting, I think there's reason to be encouraged.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver is interesting just because you could tell there was nerves in the first 45 minutes. There were sloppy touches. There was just some bobbles, and there just wasn't an overall confidence. They're playing really direct too, which felt strange because, they were a team that's mentioned they want to hold the ball a little more and, possess it. But in the second half, they did. And I thought there was genuinely a 20-minute period where they were taking the game to Pacific. They didn't turn it into goals. And ultimately, at this level, if you don't punish teams for those sorts of mistakes, they will eventually get thrown right down your throat. And that's kind of what happened with Aparicio. But I think that was a good start for Vancouver. It's going to be interesting just to me what they do with their offense, because I felt, especially in this game against York, it felt like at times it feels like they just lack a bit of oomph, in the sense that, I'm just using the York example because it's more recent, but even against against Pacific, by not going with the natural wingers, like they went Sean Hundal and Gabriel Bitar as their wingers, I guess quasi wingers, because like Hundal is more of a nine and Bitar is more of these days an eight. It just felt like they didn't get much verticality, and they didn't really offer much of a threat, which, hey, you don't need verticality, but when you're trying to hold the ball and have possession and you have that's where you want to have an eight and an extra eight the way they had Bitar. And I just found that very interesting that they went for a setup like that, but then we're going long. Cause it's like, look, I'm all for going direct, all going long, but I'll just use Valor versus York as an example. Valor had Keon Williams, Pacific Nyonga Beer. They're like, go run. And it worked to perfection. York's fullbacks were flying up the field and weren't able to fill in that space. And it just felt like Vancouver, the lineup didn't necessarily fully match the approach, also little things as well. Like they'd play Nima Moazeni as the six. And, seems like a guy like Nima's profile, from the glimpses I've seen, he seems like he'd be a very good eight. He's a guy who controls the ball, controls the tempo. That's someone you want maybe playing at the six again, if you're playing a little more possession based, whereas, a guy like Elliot Simmons is a bit more familiar with the six. Why not throw him in there? So I'm just curious to see how Vancouver evolves, because I think they are eventually going to be a team that wants to hold the ball a lot more. And I think the fact that they're starting on the road makes it hard, go to Pacific, a team that dominates at home, that dominates in possession, go try and do your thing. Like, that's a tough ask for this from the schedule makers. So I'm just curious to see how they develop, because I would have thought, based on what they had in their roster, that guy like Min-Jae Kwak, who looked really good at fullback for his credit, wonder if he could have played on the wing, if a guy like Nicky Giam or Jimia could have played on the wing as well, given that he showed some good verticality. But those are questions we'll see over the course of the year. It's far too early to ask. Those are just little things I'm noticing now, and I'm just curious to see how they evolve. Like, are we going to really see them build that structure and then really start to hold the ball more as they get used to playing in these games, or if it's something where we're going to see them adapt? Because, yeah, I like the piece. Like, Caden Cheung looked really good in midfield. That's an experiment I'd love to see continue, especially if they end up holding a lot more possession as the year goes along.
I'm glad you mentioned Kwok, because he was one of the players that really, through two matches for Vancouver, has stood out to me. And obviously a good little resume at the lower pro levels, and has bounced around a little bit. And I think that might be a good add for them. In terms of your like tactical points, while listening, what I was thinking is, okay, those are all things tactically that would happen on the ball in possession. And I feel like maybe some of the seeming strange decisions were because those are the guys that were comfortable in defensive structure and they didn't want to get battered 3-0, right? I think the idea, you're going to Pacific, you can grind out a point, you'd probably take that in your opener. And
100%.
I think it's only when they get a little settled in, it's almost good for them that they got through the opener, they got through a Canadian championship match, probably better, honestly, just to focus on CPL this season. I feel like there's going to be more to uncover there in possession. They're in their early stages. They're not there yet. Maybe there will be some tactical question marks, but I'd like to give them a little bit of leash to figure things out. And also, they just don't know yet in the heat of battle, what the right player combinations, where the real chemistry is in the squad. I mean, it's always so challenging. You're bringing, you know, 18 to 22 new guys together that have, you know, pretty much almost all never played together before. And then asking them to, you know, to go up against some squads that are reasonably unchanged from last season. One question I had, Alex, from this Pacific Vancouver FC match, which I'd be curious as a CPL insider and expert for you to weigh in. Easton Ngaro, what do you think what kind of goal should he be aiming for this season in the CPL? And then additionally, like, what is the career path for a guy like Ngaro? Because I think it's interesting that he's had some success in the CPL, went to Vancouver setup, realized that maybe he wasn't going to get the opportunities he was looking for. Now he goes back as a proven CPL player to a really strong Pacific team. What does he have to do to increase his profile? And then if he's able to increase his profile, you know, he's not 21 anymore. He's, I think, 24 now. Where does he go from here? Because he's one of the most interesting players to me to watch this season in the CPL, because there's so much, you know, raw potential there, but it's a guy that's not getting up there in age, but he's, you know, running out of time in terms of making that next big move. So I just, I'm curious for your thoughts on kind of what to think or what to expect from Easton Ngaro this season.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly before we get to Easton Ngaro, the tactical notes are very true for VFC. I just would say it's more tactical notes, less questions. I'm just curious to see how things evolve. For example, little things like Ibrahim Bakare playing at right back. What I could see is, in possession, are they planning on moving Kwok up to the left, Chung to the right, 3-5-2? They just haven't got around to that. Little things. And we'll see how things develop over time. And again, it's just interesting to see when you put, you know, some players in new positions, what the whole end game was that. But I'm full faith that Vancouver FC, if this is the start, Afshin Gottby has impressed me just with his words and some of the little things. As for Ngaro, he's going to be an interesting one to watch. I think minimum baseline 10 goals. Let's not kid ourselves. I think it's something where he's on a Pacific team that needs goals. Goals will be kind of the goal, so to speak. But I'm just interested. It's going to be interesting, I think, to see little sides of his game develop, because I think at Edmonton, he had to do a lot, and it worked. He got a lot of his goals, and, you know, despite maybe being the main threat and having to deal with that, and that's impressive. But now, at least with Edmonton, he can almost thrive in the fact that teams are like, oh, it's Edmonton, we're going to break them down, and Ngaro could thrive in a bit more space on the counter, you know, even though he was kind of the team's main threat. Now with Pacific, as you saw in the opening game, they're going to be facing a lot of blocks like that and guys who are going to be jostling and grappling and going after Ngaro. And depending on that, I thought Ngaro's performance was a good start for the first game. Yeah, he didn't score, but I thought he did well to just overall not get too frustrated with the fact that he was getting heavily, you know, physical contact. He's a tall guy. They're always going to want to mess with him a bit to avoid him getting on the end of anything in the box. And from there, I just want to see little growth like that in his game. How does he get involved in possession? How does he, you know, hold up the ball? You know, how does he fight through moments of contact where he might get double teamed and et cetera? And I think it's something where, as a striker, the nice thing is if you score a lot of goals, you'll get noticed. Like Alejandro Diaz is what, 26, 27? And he got a decent move because he scored a lot of goals, did a good job of holding up the ball, did a lot of those little things. Scouts see that, they pick you up. And I think it's something where, as a Canadian, I think ideally long-term, maybe Ngaro paves the way at an MLS level. Because I think still at 24, 25, it's too early to write someone like him off. And hey, the nice thing is, by getting a player of this pedigree in the CPL, it's not a bad thing for the league long-term as well to have some guys stick around. Because of course, we want everyone to move on to the next level. And, you know, you want your Ngaro's to move along as much as you want your John Anielessis, you know, who are 18 and taking the pro step. But it also isn't a bad thing to have a guy maybe play a year or two or three, and continue to keep that quality up, because sometimes when you lose good players, it can be hard to replace. Of course, as we might get into in our next discussion, there's a reality that there's a lot of League One players that could fill his role, and maybe, you know, Or at least say he left. Sorry. If he left, there were guys who I'd be confident could step up and be a good replacement for Nangaro. But it's also not a bad thing if guys stick around long term. But I do think still at his age, it's too early to say things like that about him. I think it's something where there's still a future for him, especially if he gets double digit goals, they win a championship. He maybe chips in with some assists and looks overall mature. Scouts are going to look at a 6'7" striker and, of course, want to sign the guy.
Yeah, the reason I key in on Nangaro is not to put any kind of pressure or to single him out. I just think he's such an interesting prototypical case for a guy who's sort of proven at the level. You know, he's at an age where it's not a young prospect, but it's not a veteran who necessarily will stay in the league forever. It's just how does the CPL deal with those kinds of players going forward? As you said, I mean, it would be fantastic if Nangaro stays and puts up 15 goal seasons and he's a star player in the CPL. Like that could be fantastic for the league, but how does that work for him? How does it all fit? I just think he's a very interesting test case for how the league's going to evolve and how certain players are going to fit in going forward. So that's the reason I brought it up. But I'm always, you know, it's hard to miss him on the pitch. And so because of that a little bit, it's hard not to think about him as a player and, yeah, what it means for the team moving forward. Okay, one thing I did want to pick up as we kind of transition to Canadian Championship is we talked about Vancouver FC a little bit. I just want to say, I mean, I don't think this is an unpopular opinion. They got absolutely hosed in the Canadian Championship by that penalty decision. I'm not sure what they were looking at. I think even the York player, what was that, Alou, who went down in the box, was a bit shocked that they actually gave it. And then the other CPL team, Vancouver FC, they had an equally strong, if not better, penalty shout late on, which I did think was a foul, and nothing given. So I just, you know, they're winless through two matches, but I think it's worth, at least in the Canadian Championship midweek, pointing out that they were up against it for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, the first one was tough, and just in the sense it was a tough call, not a great one. I think it's something where, again, you look at a lack of VAR and wonder, what if? Hopefully one day you can get to that stage. Because people,
there's downsides. I mean, we have the best leagues in the world with, you know, state-of-the-art technology, and there's lots of horrendous calls in those leagues as well. So, you know, there's no silver bullet solution.
Yeah, but I think at least with VAR, you have that excuse to grow and learn. Because ultimately, when you don't have VAR, you can always just be like, look, I missaw and I didn't have a chance to correct it. Because mistakes happen. So the fact that you're always going to have that technology there to correct mistakes and look back and at least grow long-term and learn, I think that's why VAR, I'm always team VAR. Yeah, I think it was just one where Bakary just got, it was timing. It was unlike, I've seen this before where he got a yellow card and it was a dumb yellow card, but he kind of, not saying he did it to himself, but you can tell through the first bit of CPL and now Can Champ, refs have been told to crack down with not time wasting, but little things off the ball. And honestly, I love it because there's so many times where it's like players do it because they can. And it's just like, as a referee, set the line. Like, how many times you see someone makes a foul and they pick up the ball? It's like, what are you doing? You just fouled someone. Why are you picking up the ball? But they can get away with it. And it's like always innocent. It's like, oh, I pick up the ball because I fouled a guy and I'm talking to the ref. Like, if I was a ref, I'd be looking at it, be like, do you need that ball in your hands to talk to me? You drop it. I'm going to give you like a yellow card. And that's just maybe me being a boomer, but you get my point. It's something where there's a lot of little things like that. And I don't blame a player. It's something where if that's an edge you get, you can get away with it. You're a pro. You have to win the game at all costs. You take those little moments. And that's something where Bakary was, especially someone coming from England, maybe forgot, you know, that, or maybe didn't get the memo about some of these new rule changes. I noticed that it was interesting. Some of the foreign players were really struggling with it. Like a guy like Miguel Acosta on Ottawa always loves his yellow cards. He was someone that was like, he got a yellow and he was like, his face was just like, what? So yeah, Bakary got a yellow because he like wasn't moving from the throw in. He was trying to be cheeky. And I think it's something where when the foul happens, the ref subconsciously kind of saw, ooh, Bakary fouled again. He's kind of, you know, looking for it. He was a bit angry after the yellow, calls the penalty. And that's what I think what happened. I think it's something where, yeah, I think the referee, maybe looking back, might have regretted not seeing VAR just because, yeah, there was contact, but it was just, you know, minimal, and it just didn't really feel like there was enough for a penalty there. But hey, I must say though, I do love that crackdown on the not the time wasting. Again, it's not time wasting, but I'm curious to see how it develops. But just certainly in this situation, that early yellow may have cost Bakari in that penalty situation. Not saying that justifies the penalty call, but that just looks to have appeared what happened. Because I'm pretty sure the penalty happened like less than a minute after his yellow too, which no coincidence.
That's a really good point. It's just those I always when you talk about players adapting to a new league, I always think about Jannie Obakel in MLS, right?
Where yellow machine.
He just could not stop. He just was not used to the standard, and it took a while to get it figured out. So that's one that players have to deal with. Okay, well, without further ado, then, do we get to this is the feature course, this is the main course, this is, I mean, it's dessert, depending on whether you like the main course or dessert more. TSS Rovers, a magical night at Swangard, dominating Valor and taking them down 3-1 to advance to the next round of the Canadian Championship. And really within a couple hours here live, we're going to get to see Pacific FC and Cavalry battle it out to face TSS in the next round. But Alex, just maybe you were there, so reflect on, tell us how it was taking in that historic occasion.
It was just special. Like, that's what I'd start with. And I think it really started Monday because I went to Rovers training and I managed to catch the end because I was in meetings all morning and just rushed out because I wanted to chat some guys. And I showed up and they were training at a very high level. Funnily enough, like the second goal, ball back, Jones hits it over the top, Eric Edwardson runs in behind. I may or may not have seen them drill out that play. I'm just saying that I'm sure Will Cromack's a smart enough guy where he'll know teams are drilled in on those sorts of plays and he'll adjust. But again, I just love little details like that they were literally just hammering home that sort of play where they're like, catch them early with an early ball, and they executed it in motion during the game. But basically, safe to say, it was just interesting to see the mood at training because it was just so upbeat, so good vibes. You could tell what it meant for the Rovers to take this game. For some, it would have been nerves. You know, you're like, oh, shoot, like this is a game. You could feel it in like the intensity where it's almost like too intense. But I just liked the energy and vibes. Even after training, guys were just, you know, having fun trying to kick a ball around. It was funny. Michael McCall, of course, a good friend of the show, and you know, and helping out with the Rovers during this run, he was saying that like on Tuesday as well before the game, these players, their vibe was so good, and it was like they did their match day minus one training, usually only supposed to be an hour, you have a freaking game the next day. Guys were out there just wanting to play little games and like shoot the ball, and the coaches, the guy, guys, you're playing one of the biggest games of your lives tomorrow, like get off the field, go home, like go home, go rest, go recover. It's like just the whole vibe around the team and the energy was good, and I could sense it in the interviews. It wasn't like a nervousness. It was a calmness. It was, we know what we need to do. We know what we want to do. But at the same time, like win or lose, like this is special. I think that's something that teams maybe get caught up in. It's win, win, win. And not saying that teams shouldn't be going win, 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 but it's something where you have to remember this is a special occasion. This is David versus Goliath. This is semi-pro going up against professionals who train and play every week for a salary. And then in terms of the game itself, everything was special. I mean, shout out to, you know, the Rovers, the Swangardians, all the fans that packed in, a lot of kids as well through that great donate a ticket initiative. It looked like 3-4K. The whole stand was packed. The Swangardians were full as always, the smoke bombs, just the overall noise when each goal went in. You can't get much better of a facility than Swangard. I'll always stand by that. The grass looked just well manicured, a bit wet, a bit slippery, and Valor didn't maybe like that, but it just looked well manicured. The sun was out, the trees in the background. Like, it's all that sort of like nostalgic typical soccer stuff that just makes you realize why you love the sport. And then that's without even getting the game itself. I mean, the performance itself, we can break it down more, but it was just the perfect performance. It was something where even without going into tactics, the Rovers were committed. They were hardworking. They were organized and they took their chances. And you can see what it meant. Like, I just, for me, the one that really got me was Matteo Polisi's third goal, or the second goal, the third of their goal. And he scores and he just runs in the crowd. And it was just like a lion just screaming. Like, it wasn't even like a coherent celebration. It was just diving in, getting sprayed with beer. And you could just feel the energy through. You could see what it means. Like, this is a guy who's a CPL champion. This is a guy who should be playing pro right now, goes out there, scores for his former club. And it was just the passion, the release of energy. And that kind of summed up what kind of night it was. It was just a night where you could feel the grassroots levels of the game. And it was one of those nights where it just really makes you love the sport again. And I'm not saying I don't love the sport when I'm watching all these other games, but it was just it was just what the game should be all about. And it was just so special to be there and be a part of that.
Well, this is what we've talked about in this show for a while, right? Is that, you know, it's the magic of a third round FA Cup where, you know, Scunthorpe United knocks off a massive club, right? As people that, you know, didn't grow up in England or didn't grow up in Germany, you know, but have seen this kind of stuff go on, you always sort of imagined or fantasized about, well, this, you know, wouldn't it be crazy if this happened in Canada? And this is the first real taste on home soil. And so I think it was so special. You outlined that, to me, that Polisi celebration really stood out as well. And especially because this isn't, yes, he's a CPL champion and he's, you know, played at the pro level, but this is not a guy who just swanned into this TSS team. He's been there. You know, he's grown up with TSS. Mm-hmm. And so now to be part of this huge, you know, crowning moment in their history, I think is really, really cool. Like, I mean, obviously, you know that he wants to go play pro, get back into the CPL, but I have to feel like almost, you know, all right, you know, Valor looked at him this preseason, couldn't find a roster spot. You feel like that was meant to be, right? So that he could go back to Rovers and that he could produce this performance. On a night where everything went right for them, they were also fully deserving of their victory. You know, the pitch played a little narrow, the grass a little longer, like it played the right way for them. They knew how to deal with that. And Valor got really, really frustrated. It felt like TSS from the outset was, you know, they were in it to land the knockout blow and they didn't mind if they swung and missed. Like, there were a couple moments in the first opening 5 minutes where Valor players ran through like half the TSS team, the Rovers lunging in for challenges and missing, but they were being aggressive. They were lunging in. And so they weren't going to go down without a fight. And we were talking about it before the show. Obviously, you know, you're probably not going to high press the entire match. And Valor did sit quite deep at times, but their defensive line, their holding midfielders made steps into space when the moment was right and cut out a lot of passes. And then we're able to turn quickly, you know, get vertical, get, you know, put someone like Edwardson in space, giving Valor real problems. And Edwardson's able to produce two assists. It was just, yeah, I think absolutely phenomenal. The crowd seemed fantastic. Swangard looking at it through the broadcast with those trees in the background. I mean, that's just
immaculate.
Anyone who's grown up in Vancouver, that's an iconic view, right? And especially if you factor in the Whitecaps history. For me, like, SFU football is something I identify with that place as well. And even just like playing sporting events there growing up, running track there growing up. And then to see a, you know, what is for all intents and purposes a, you know, it's a professional level soccer match in the Canadian Championship with, you know, people I've seen play at the university level, and just having all of this come together and then just a dream result too, because, you know, I mean, it's worth talking about it that it wasn't, but it could have been 5-0 Valor over TSS Rovers. And then, you know, then there might be the questions of, oh, well, you know, should we really have these League One teams playing, or, oh, that's, you know, it's just a dead first round. But now there's this real, no, look, this is why building the pyramid, this is why including these League One teams in the process is really important. Like, I think you and I, Alex, we've believed this for a long time. There's lots of people in the community, all the people that have supported TSS, either with their voices or with their money, obviously, because that's a huge thing too, to have a supporter funded, a supporter run club doing this. There's been a lot of belief there, but it's also nice to put out a television product where people see it and maybe they can start to believe, they can start to consider it if they haven't before. And the fact that it's a BC team that did it is just selfishly all the better. So nothing but good things to say, really. I mean, I don't think I have to, anyone who's listening to this show, I probably don't have to convince you of any of this, but it's nice to just revel in it a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, especially, at least, I don't know about you, but I've been also watching Rovers games for 5 years. So it is kind of selfishly nice to have seen that, just that rise from 50 people on a sunny Sunday afternoon in the PDL to last night, just seeing that rise. And I think the big thing too that you mentioned, the pyramid, and I just love the belief that it gives people. I think a cool story I saw was someone was mentioning how their kid woke up today and was at the game, and they're thinking, like, they're telling their parents, like, I want to play for the Rovers one day. And like, that's sick, because little moments like this, like, you know, makes you believe that you can go out and play for a team where you can make games like this and just have those sorts of storybook moments. And I think that's a good point, because it's like, when I was a lot younger, certainly a lot of kids, I know a lot of kids in my age group were the same, and probably yours as well, just because, you know, where the state of the sport when we were 10, 11, 12, like when I was 10, 11, like 10, say, the Whitecaps weren't an MLS team yet. The only Canadian MLS team was Toronto, and pro teams, there was a few USL teams spread around. Like, I didn't really know what FC Edmonton was. I, you know, didn't know what some of these teams were. I'm sitting there like, I love soccer, but it's like, what is there to grow up to? Like, yeah, maybe I strike a lottery tick and I end up playing, for Bayern Munich, funnily enough. To Alphonso Davies is my age, just for those wondering. So it's something where there was a bit of magic in this age group that we just didn't know it yet. But say, I'm just saying 10, because that's 10's a crucial age. 10's an age where you really can start to believe in something. You start to commit to wanting to make a future for yourself. And the reality is, you looked at soccer at the time, it was just like, for what? Like, you know, best case scenario, of course, you're playing for Real Madrid, but the realistic scenario is, you end up playing VMSL and it's a side passion. It's like, cool. Whereas now, yeah, like, I think a kids now are 10 looking out there like, this is awesome. Like, imagine looking at that, like, yeah, I'd want to go be a Rover. Yeah, I'd want to go play in League One. And what's nice is that you can say things like that, and that's just not you from there. You can go from League One to CPL. You could go CPL to MLS. From MLS, you can go to Europe. Like, these aren't unreal. Like, I'm not saying like fairy tales. Like, I'm saying there are examples of guys who've gone League One to CPL. There are examples of guys going CPL to MLS. There's guys going from MLS to Bayern Munich. Not saying it's all happened at once, but I'm saying those pathways are connected. And all of a sudden, a kid can sit there and dream, like, yeah, I'm 10 and I want to play for the Rovers one day. And that could also lead me to, you know, dream big. And that's what I love about this whole pyramid, is that it just ties that all together. And again, a performance like that helps, because, I mean, we can dive more into the performance in a bit. But what I loved about it too, the Rovers had way more shots on target. They had more XG. They were overall just controlled the boxes, which, again, I will, you know, as wise people always say, it doesn't matter what you do in the middle of the park. It helps a lot. It's very important. But if you win the boxes, you will win the game. It's not, you will most likely win the game. You win the game in the boxes. And the Rovers did that. And that's what I love. It was a confident, it was an assured performance. I do think that helps a little, because had the Rovers gone out, you fly by the skin of your teeth, you score a lucky goal, that was your only shot all game, you win 1-0. Yeah, it's great. It's a miracle. But you're sitting there thinking, like, holy crap, you got lucky. And it is nice that they went out and went toe-to-toe, because that just kind of adds to the almost the Cinderella story. Like, it's not just you sitting there and getting lucky. It's, you know, the little guy sitting there like, screw it, I'm going to swing at the big guy. And you know, turns out the big guy had a few more weaknesses than maybe you would have otherwise bargained for if you were nervous and scared to swing.
Well, and I mean, added to that, it took a penalty, you know, for Valor to convert, right? And other than that, they didn't have a lot of grade A opportunities throughout the match. I mean, there's always some hectic moments in the box. There were a couple of real scramble fests, which TSS ended up doing a pretty good job clearing. But I just wanted to circle back really quick to your point about, you know, someone's kid who would say, oh, hey, I want to play for the TSS Rovers. Obviously, we both grew up, you know, Canadians with hockey as part of our lives. And so I always think about, okay, sure, I went to Vancouver Canucks games growing up. But what stood out to me was when I had, you know, a friend's older brother who was playing Junior B or Junior A, and we went out to watch those games, and there's still, you know, 700, 1,000 people there watching. It's a great environment. And you look at that and go, oh, I know that guy. And hey, maybe in 4 or 5 years, I can do that. And you don't, you'd love to go play in the NHL, but you're also realistic in the sense that you see that and think, well, okay, first I'm going to go do that, and then I can kind of work my way up. And so just to have the same thing in soccer, where there's these more realistic opportunities, these, you know, the thing that would get you up in the morning to go to your training and have you really pushing for something that doesn't just seem like a fantasy, but like, oh, I know someone who plays for that team. And, you know, if I work hard and I'm dedicated, I could do that too. I think that's just bringing these links. And then getting to, you know, not only are these teams out there and you bring awareness, but these teams get to play in a national competition for a national title. That's serious stuff. And so I think that's just fantastic. But yeah, I mean, Alex, what did you want to pick up about the, we've already talked, you know, kind of weaved some themes from the match into the discussion, but maybe some additional stuff that stood out to you in person you wanted to dive into.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main theme I kind of want to go off of is, again, I kind of mentioned a bit, just how professional of a performance it was from the Rovers. I think it really needs to be credited because, firstly, defensively, they were very organized. Like, and it wasn't organized as in just 10 guys behind the ball and just fill gaps. It was 4-2-3-1. It was keep the spaces between the 4 and the 2 tight and just have the 3 and the 1 fill in where needed. And it was just lovely because it was side to side. There were never gaps between the right back and center back and center back and center back and then left back and center back. The two CMs, Kyle Jones and Ali Zohar, phenomenal. Like they were the underrated players of the game for me, just the way that how good they were, especially off the ball, just side to side to side to side. It was a lot of running. Like they were just, but they never let a gap go. And I think that's a huge difference. Like you're going up like Valor against York on the weekend, tore through York's midfield. Like York tried to go through a pivot with Jeremy Gagnon-Lapierre, who is always a great player. And I thought he did well, but they paired him with a number 10, Alou, who we saw looked a lot better on the wing, funnily enough. There was just so many gaps. Like Alou was kind of lost in his positioning, and then, you know, Gagnon-Lapierre kind of had to do a lot of extra work. What happened? Valor tore through that. With Zohar and Jones, they were just so organized and compact, and that was huge because that allowed the Rovers to be aggressive defensively. I think it's one thing to sit on your line and just clear ball after ball, but for the most part, the Rovers did well to close down crosses, to tackle the ball in midfield, to win the ball in good enough areas where not only are they putting less pressure on themselves to defend, but they're also winning the ball in good areas. Like, look at the goals. Like, some of the goals, they literally won the ball, like, in the middle of the park. And it's way easier to get to the goal when you win the ball in the middle of the park than when, you know, it's because you're winning it in your own box, or because you're, you know, Valor took a shot and they missed, and then you're starting from a goal kick. It's a lot easier to transition when you actually catch them in the middle of the park. And then from there, that leads to the other point that I thought, again, it helped have Polisi, and I loved the confidence he brought, the composure in front of goal. Because how many times do we see League One teams get chances and they throw it away? I'll even just use this week because it's fresh in our mind. 0-0, Vaughn Montreal, Omar Marzouk, fantastic run. He has a chance to cut inside with the touch. He had Rudy Camacho on his shoulder. Rudy Camacho looked slow. You just burned him. It was like what Thierry Henry was mentioned the other week. What are you taught as a striker? Cut across. Cut across, either you get a red card, and then all of a sudden everyone's, you know, it's not very, you know, Montreal's not sitting very happy if there's a red card, or you get a better angle to shoot. But he took himself out with that touch. It felt like that was the chance. Montreal ends up scoring, and you're like, oh man, what if that Marzouk chance? Think about Laval versus Forge. They had this chance. I think it was the 10th minute. Ball fell, chance to hit a volley. Player just like fell over and swung at it and it hit the ground and went over the bar. Like, what was the technique on that? It's something where, yeah, you're nervous. He understands it. For me, the big difference was ball falls to Matteo Polisi. It's the 32nd minute. Just watch it again if you can. Because what I love, it's on his right. He's a right-footed player. How many times would you think in a League One game it falls to a League One player? Oh, shoot, I got a ball. Let me just strike it with my right. I'm comfortable. It gets blocked. Like, there's a player in front of him. I love that he opens up to shoot, puts it on his left, opens up a new angle. It almost throws off Valor because they were like, oh, he's just going to shoot. He's going to rush. He hits the shot perfectly. That extra second gets him a goal, and all of a sudden, they're flying. Look at the next one. Ball falls to Ivan Mejia. You know, he realizes, oh, shoot, I actually have some time in the box. Let me not rush a shot. Let me wait a bit. Oh, there's a slot. Posting in. Goal. And I just love the composure that they showed on those two finishes in particular. And those were details. It's like, I just love that the Rovers drilled those down and they talked about it after the game. Like, that was the plan. Be organized defensively, be aggressive, be clinical. And there's just too many times where League One teams go out. And that's the difference between levels. It's those margins, it's those details. Because a pro team, you give them one chance, they score 95% of the time. Whereas if you're a League One team, that's the sort of levels you're going to have to match if you want to keep up.
Yeah, a lot of good points there. I mean, I think it's tough too because, you know, not only is it okay, maybe the finishing, the composure in front of the goal at the League One level, but then you're doing it on a bigger stage than normal, right? So the eyes get really, really big, and maybe it's difficult to. I always think about, you know, whenever you go up a level in whatever sport, the game feels so much faster, right? And then when you're playing against players that aren't as good as you, it feels you're in slow motion, right? And everyone is scrambled around you, but you're just gliding through. And I think that's for Matteo Polisi, that's kind of where he's at. Always been someone back to, you know, TSS Rovers days, SFU days. No one's more comfortable on the ball, right? Like, he loves to just be in possession. So that's not an uncomfortable state. And so I think he's in no rush. He's got good control. And to me, that finish that looked like standard stuff because it's just what Matteo gets it in and around the box. He can swap it between feet. He can create different angles and usually find side netting or close to, and getting it past a massive keeper in Yesley as well. Like, you're not going to beat him from a tight angle unless it's a really well-placed shot. So, and, you know, shout out to Yesley, actually. I mean, made a penalty save. Overall, cannot blame him at all. He was fantastic in the opener for Valor as well in the CPL. So I do feel bad for him because, you know, that's just goalkeeping, right? Sometimes the match doesn't go your team's way, but I thought he kept his composure and, you know, to make that penalty save, even though it was ultimately not that meaningful, was still like a big moment to kind of hold your head up. You mentioned the difference between levels, and I think I wanted to pick up on this. We were talking about before the show. I don't want to be the you know, the doomsayer and kind of flip to the negative side of this, but obviously questions have to be asked of Valor after this match, right? And I also think it's worth considering talking about, okay, well, where does, you know, we have three levels here in Canada now. We have League One, we have the CPL, and we have MLS. We're going to collect more and more data now as the seasons go on about where these leagues relate to each other and what the gaps are, what the overlaps are between the leagues. And I think you made a great point pre-show that in terms of, you know, individual talent and quality, we're already seeing that, hey, the just the pure raw talent level between League One and CPL, there's a good amount of overlap. I think we've seen that now. Getting to play as a pro every day, the level of tactical work you do, the level of training you do is maybe at a different standard, and that creates some advantages. But it seems like there's certainly some players there in League One that are more than capable of making that step. And then I just also wonder too, I don't want to argue that, you know, I think rosters like Pacific, Cavalry, Forge, they have guys that certainly could be playing at the MLS level. We've been calling for it, like an Amir Didich, you know, Dada Luke, guys like that, like, hey, give them a not a CPL opportunity, but an MLS opportunity. But I do also wonder at the lower level of the CPL rosters, Valor, unfortunately, probably the Wanderers this season, Vancouver FC, York, you know, there might be more overlap with League One than there is with MLS. So I just, again, this is, you know, we're taking very small sample sizes here and trying to extrapolate big conclusions, which is always a dangerous thing to do. But it's just something I'm going to want to watch going forward, how we sort of view these three leagues, how they sit in relation to each other as the Canadian Championship and as the development of the soccer pyramid in Canada goes forward.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something that's hard to unpack, or it's hard to put in words, but this is how I'd try to go about it. I think what this showed, certainly, the League One overlap and the CPL overlap, it's not as huge as you would think. It's not as there's big overlap, basically, is what I'm saying. Yeah. And it makes sense.
The gap is not as big as some might perceive it to be.
Yeah. And look, there's 8 League One BC teams this year. There's friggin' like 20 League One Ontario teams. There's 15 or League One Quebec, Ligue 1 Quebec. I'm going to have to get used to that.
We're going to have to get used to that. Yeah, it's different.
There's like 40 of those teams. There's Prairies teams coming in. There's, hopefully the Atlantic. I'll use League One BC's example. It's brand new. Year one. This is a team, Rovers team. Of course, they have that. They're not a year one team. We know that. The Rovers have been around for a while. But let's, you know, this is a team from a brand new league, yet they were able to go out in the CPL and compete. It just shows with all these semi-pro teams are going to be at similar levels. It shows that there's a lot of overlap with the CPL. I think it's just the difference comes down to margins, fitness. You know, for example, some of these semi-pro teams are not able to train as often. I found this fascinating is that for the Rovers, for example, some of their players, key players who played huge games on Wednesday, they missed a training session in the week because they're working. Like, that's just the reality. They're semi-pro. They can't, like, this isn't something where you're a pro player. You train friggin' every day. You know, that's just that's what you do. It's like you live, breathe soccer. So first of all, those are little details. But yeah, from there, I think, I think it's details that separate the levels. Cause now that I think about it too, the same can be said with CPL to MLS, because it's not like CPL has been blown out the water by MLS either, and there have been upsets. So it's something where that overlap is similar as well. Like, you think about Pacific Vancouver, Pacific beating Vancouver. You think, for the most part, like, they're, other than Toronto blowing the doors off York a few years ago, most of the ties off the top of my head have all been very close. I think what it shows, it comes down to is just, of course there's talent levels, but it's details. And I think it's something where what the Rovers showed in this game, which I found fascinating, was they showed that each team has weaknesses. Like, the same way the Whitecaps have weaknesses, TFC have weaknesses, Montreal have weaknesses, the same way all the CPL teams have weaknesses, they can be exposed. And that comes down to details. And that's where I think credit also has to be given to the Rovers for exposing those details. Because sometimes, again, like what we see with League One teams, and this isn't a shot, this is more just reality, there's almost a bit of naivety. It's like, oh, we're just in this big game, we're so excited, and you forget the details. It becomes too much about the game, and oh, you're playing on this stage, showcase yourself, guys start running a little too hard, they start dribbling a bit too much, they turn it over, because yeah, you're not going to, like, as much as you want to back yourself, like, you're not going to dribble Victor Wanyama in the midfield. And what I liked about Rovers' game plan was there wasn't like, oh, let's have our guys just go off. It was, you know, let's expose Valor's weaknesses, which is they struggle to break down low blocks and looked exposed in transition. Let's expose that. And I think teams that have done that have done well. Forge always does a good job of that. And that's why they always give MLS teams tough run. funny enough, think of Ferryside, which, by the way, it must be said, hasn't been put out there. Guess who was on the Pacific team for Ferryside that upset the Whitecaps in the biggest CPL MLS upset in Canchep history, who was also on the Rovers team that upset Valor in the biggest, probably overall upset in Canchep history, none other than Matteo Polisi. It just must be said. He's got something about that underdog floor. But in that Caps game, just quickly to note, what did the Pacific do? They brought the game to the Whitecaps. They played aggressive. They ran, they didn't sit back, and their details were immaculate that game. And I just think little matches like that show that. It's so cliche, but the level, the biggest difference, other than, you know, small, there are talent differences. Like, again, like a guy like Ryan Gauld, yeah, of course, like if he played in the CPL, he'd tear it apart. But it really just comes down to these overall details that are as a team, that come down to fitness, that come down to speed of play, how fast you pass the ball, little margins.
No, I think that's a good point. And yeah, for a semi-pro team, TSS's mentality was incredibly professional in that match, right? Mm-hmm. Like they stuck to their game plan. They had those set plays. They had those little details that they were committed to. And it was just a nice blend of, there was intensity, there was fighting for your life element, but always within a certain level of composure. Like they never really, I was waiting for the moment in the second half where TSS lost their heads and the moment got a little too big, and it never really came. Even the penalty conceded, I don't feel like heads dropped or there was any sense of panic. It was just like, all right, that was a bad break, but on we go. We could easily score another one. So anyways, what a fantastic night. And now we're going to get to see Rovers again in the Canadian Championship, which is absolutely awesome. And they said this on the post-match show, and I thought it was a good point, is, you know, hey, if you're TSS, you say, we just beat a CPL team. We know for sure we're playing a CPL team next. So, you know, sky's the limit, really. And then that potential matchup with the Vancouver Whitecaps looming in the distance. Now, obviously, they've got a good ways to go, but I think that would be a dream matchup. And really, I mean, not to disparage Cavalry, because I think the history in the Canadian Championship between Cavalry and Vancouver Whitecaps would be a good enough storyline. But then to get your, you know, either Pacific or TSS Rovers against the Whitecaps would be absolutely massive. Really, really no bad potential matchups there for Vancouver if they're able to get past York. This is all with the caveat that they still need to get past York United. So, but I think, yeah, obviously if they're able to do that, certainly some mouth-watering possibilities going forward in Canchamp.
Hey, as someone said, West is best. And certainly when it comes to drama, the Western side of the bracket, there is no lose, because either you get Cavalry Whitecaps. Whitecaps have never beat Cavalry across three games. You get Whitecaps Rovers. I mean, at Swangard. Like, come on. Like that one writes itself. Like, Ryan Gauld running up against Kyle Jones on the grass at Swangard. You get Whitecaps Pacific on the island again. Ferryside Part 2. Can Pacific pull it out? If York wins, it's a guaranteed CPL finalist, which would be the first CPL finalist in a bracket year, in a year where there's a legit, you know, brackets. Of course, the year Forge made the final, there was a guaranteed CPL finalist because it was the COVID year. So that storyline's there.
The Canadian Championship that may or may not have actually happened. No one could really confirm whether or not that trophy was handed out.
Couple thousand people in Hamilton say that there was some final last year, but it was 2020. I don't know. Strange how that works. But hey, thanks to it, Lucas McNaughton is a CPL champion or a Canadian champion, and so is Caden Chung. But yeah, no, it's something where, yeah, there's no shortage of storylines, because yeah, if York beats Whitecaps, all CPL finalists almost guaranteed. Of course, you can't count out the Rovers. Imagine if the Rovers made the final and hosted it. Don't want to get too ahead, but Rovers, TFC, Bernadeschi, and Insigne running up against the Rovers fullbacks. It could only write itself at Swangard. But yeah, it's just no shortage of drama, and that's why we love our cups.
Yeah, absolutely. Hard not to be enticed by that on the West Coast. I think it'll be fun, and you know, the cue and insert the TFC and CF Montreal fans complaining about having to match up against each other, but that also creates a great early round Canadian Championship affair that I think will be highly entertaining as well. So, lots more to look forward to. Alex, I mean,
look, I was going to say, if you're TFC, who do you want to play right now? The Rovers or Montreal? Probably not the Rovers after last night. But no, jokes aside, just figured I'd throw that out there.
No, absolutely. I mean, yeah, anything we want to add here from a great first weekend in the CPL, magical midweek in Canadian Championship. Obviously, if you're listening, you'll probably know the result of Pacific and Cavalry. We're recording right prior to the match, basically. And then Whitecaps going forward will probably be hitting you up at some point before the Whitecaps play their next match to dive in a little bit to Colorado. Maybe we'll have some updates as well from training, kind of seeing how preparations are going. But yeah, Alex, any, you know, news, notes, final thoughts here before we sign off?
I mean, I pretty much dumped the notebook. We went in on some CPL. We went in on some cup magic. So all I'd say is long live the Voyageurs Cup / Can Champ. Long live all that. I just, again, that's why we love the game. So the fact that we're sitting here talking about all this, long live. So I don't know. Unless you have anything else, you can cut me off on this one. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Gungi-Ruzic. On Twitter, I guess at BTS Van City for now, but we'll be switching up the social handles soon. So those will be at @ThirdSub_. Just been working on some website stuff before we fully make those changes over. So stay tuned for that. Site's been busy. Got some CPL stuff, a lot of CPL stuff up on the site. Thanks to Ben and Mike who've been grinding on that. And then of course the whole 86 forever team keeping us up to date with the Whitecaps. So never a dull day to visit the Third Sub. Certainly if you're smart like me and signed up to the email notifications, been loving having a new post hop in to the inbox. And you know, from all those writers, from Sam, and you know, I'll be chipping in as well. So if you do like to read my stuff, some of it will be there as well. So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, well covered, Alex. I mean, yeah, just shout out to all our writers for doing a fantastic job. We said we were going to have more, you know, CPL content again and some, you know, some local grassroots stuff. And now there's TSS to write about. It's been fantastic. And I hope everyone's enjoying the variety on the site. We're certainly going to aim to continue to bring you that throughout the rest of the summer and going into the fall with all of this good stuff ongoing. So yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. As Alex mentioned, we'll be just watch out because we'll be switching up some social handles, trying to streamline, synchronize everything, all in an effort to, you know, make all of our content as easy to find as possible. So yeah, you can find us at thirdsubpod on Twitter, thethirdsub on Instagram. Hope you've enjoyed all the matches over this last week or so. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll chat again soon.